Good morning, good afternoon, good evening all. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on Tuesday, 11 June 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Zoom room. If you're only on the audio bridge at this time, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. And please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. With this, I will turn it back over to Jeff Newman. You can begin, Jeff.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome, everyone. Let's look at the agenda, which is up on the screen right now. I've switched the order of one item. If you read the email over the weekend, so we're going to start with a discussion on the work plan and the schedule post ICANN 65. Then we'll get into the substance of this, which is continuing on with the pre-approval process, finishing that up, and getting to the discussion on the global public interest, which I know is another complicated and lengthy subject, and then any other business. So let me first ask for any items that anyone wants to discuss under any other business, and I'll just see if anyone has anything. Okay, let me just ask then as well. Let me scroll up because I can't. There we go. And then let me see if anyone's got any additions any changes to their statements of interest. Any updates? Okay, not seeing any. Great. So if you read the agenda coming in, the email that Steve sent out, and then a follow-up, there was a link, which is not on this version. So hopefully someone can post a link in here to the work plan. The link to the work plan has been on the wiki and hasn't changed that link, but it's been there, and hopefully people have been reading it from time to time. What you'll notice, and thank you for scrolling down, we are today on June 10th, so we will be looking at the most of the time spent on the global public interest and applicant freedom of expression after we finish up some leftover items on the pre-approval process. Then we have one more call next week, and then that's prior to the meeting in Marrakesh. So that's the week of the 24th through 27th. After ICANN, you will notice some interesting changes here, and the changes are all in red line form. So a couple things. Number one is that we are going to move to twice a week. After the ICANN meeting. Yes, I know it's during the summer for the Northern Hemisphere and the winter for the Southern Hemisphere. And I know that lots of people take vacations, but we do have to get through this material. And as you can see from the work plan that we'll talk about in a second, we've already kind of extended out the schedule, but we think that going to twice a week will help us not have to extend it much further. We've certainly been taking a little bit longer talking about some of these subjects than we anticipated, and not wanting to cut off these discussions, we thought it would be best to add two calls to each week after the ICANN meeting. The topics are on there, so you'll know in advance what we're talking about. The goal, not the goal, but we will make sure that we are not repeating conversations that happened from the first call during the week and the second call and vice versa. For now, we are planning on the calls being Mondays, which we currently do, with the exception of the occasional Tuesday, which, like right now, the call is Tuesday for some people in the world. We're going to go to Monday and Thursday because there were just too many conflicts on Tuesday and Wednesday with other working group calls and PDPs and stuff going on. We do recognize that there, you know, may be some other conflicts that this might create, but hopefully not with the ICANN policy processes that are going on and the ones that we know about from the calendar. We will have to make sure that the Thursday calls do not interfere with GNSO council calls that occur once every, 3-4 weeks. So we'll make sure not to do any kind of overlap there. The second item, which I kind of referred to, is if you scroll to the end of the schedule, you'll notice that we do have dates in August now. And I see there's one typo. Can you just scroll up 1 second? I think I forgot to change that August. It should be, no, I didn't. That's right. Never mind. It's August 1st. I'm right. Never mind. Scroll, if you scroll back down, sorry, you'll see it has us going to kind of mid August now instead of what was originally in the plan, which was June or July, and then ultimately it became September, but we're trying to move that back a little bit by doing 2 calls a week. So are there any questions on that? Okay, a couple hands. So let me go to Kathy then. Oh, I don't know why they keep jumping back and forth here. I had Kathy first and then Jim, then it jumped. So I'll just go to Kathy first and then Jim.
Go to Jim first. Go ahead.
Jim, would you like to go first, please?
Sure. So Jim Prendergast for the transcript. So Jeff, what you're proposing is now 3 hours of calls per week plus for those people who are also participating Work Trek 5, an additional 90 minutes, so 4.5 hours of calls per week on this?
So if you look at the schedule, can you scroll up a little bit? We're hoping that Work Trek 5, which we don't necessarily have on here past the ICANN meeting, but we're hoping to at some point bring that into the full working group discussions. The working Work Trek 5 leaders are still discussing when that would be, but yes, for a few weeks at least, there will be some extra calls per week.
So you're anticipating that Work Trek, according to this work plan, that Work Trek 5 would be done before the ICANN meeting?
No, sorry about that. No. The leaders of Work Trek 5 are still discussing what the schedule looks like after ICANN, and we'll update this to include that schedule once the co-leads have discussed that and then brought it up with the Work Trek 5 working group.
Yeah, I mean, 3 hours is a lot for this. I know what you're trying to do here, but I want to register a concern that you're going to start to get some burnout. You're going to start to get people who, you know, are not participating because, as you mentioned, it is for Europe especially, it's a big holiday period. And in fact, a lot of the Europeans who would regularly be participating aren't even on this call right now because of the time. So, I've got some initial reservations with the amount of time you're asking people who are volunteering to commit here on a weekly basis, and would suggest that maybe, you know, we continue to have this discussion when there's better representation on the call than what we've got at this hour of the evening.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. We amongst the leadership team had a lengthy discussion on this as well, so we understand the concerns. We're going to keep this on the schedule so people can think about blocking times out if they to make sure that there's no conflicts, and we'll send out invites so to have it on people's calendar. I think we can certainly continue discussions by email, but what we're finding, unfortunately, is that the amount of conversation on email is it's just not what it should be, and it seems like calls are necessary on these topics. We are planning on being much more strict to the topics that we discuss on which days, so that if there are topics that you may not have an interest in or do not think that you necessarily need to participate, that you'll know that well in advance. Certainly understand the commitment and the potential burnout and everything else, but we're trying to look for ways to not slip further behind. And this is the most logical way that we can do it. So let me go to Kathy and Christopher, and then, thanks.
Great. Hi, Jeff. It's Kathy. You won't be surprised to find that Cheryl also, and I'm getting an echo, I think, that I don't think this is the most logical way to proceed. Many of us have already planned our summers. We passed Memorial Day now. We planned our summer schedule based on the information that we had. Sorry about the feedback, guys. I think this puts at a distinct disadvantage those of us in the group who are not paid to be here. Many people are, and this is part of their jobs, but for those of us who aren't, you're doubling the amount of time, and there are other things going on in ICANN. So I think this is distinctly unfair. I also think you have a relatively few number of participants as it is for the importance of this PDP that you're leading, and leading quite well. So I object to two meetings a month, and I think it will detract greatly from the discussion and from the participation and result in incredible unfairness and should probably be reported to council. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And you said two a month. You meant two a week, and Javier just put that into the chat just to clarify what you said. So thanks, Kathy. Let me go to Christopher.
Good morning, everybody. Christopher Wilkinson for the record. Here it is 10 past 5 in the morning. I think this is quite impracticable. You've already got, in the light of the importance and scope of some of the subjects, you've got a very small participation here, and some interest groups are represented by single figure participants. It won't work. The PDP has not yet begun to deal with the work track 5 issues. You will not finish this by September. Much of the public discussion has not yet begun. I'm less sanguine about the co-leadership. I feel that you're presiding over a great deal of recursiveness. The same subjects are brought up over and over again and not resolved, and that will continue as far as I can see. And if some of our stakeholders think that they can, in effect, filibuster this this whole issue by ensuring that it takes so much time that you finish up back in 2012 through exhaustion, I don't think that's going to happen either. There are propositions on the table which are so far removed from common sense and reasonable public policy that, frankly, you won't solve the problem by doubling the time. You need to get real. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. I fully understand your comments. let's make sure that we're going to block these dates out and times. We can certainly continue this discussion on email. I don't think we should take up more of the time on this call to talk about this issue. And also on email, let's talk about ways in which we can make things go a little bit more efficiently to get through the subjects. So let's move on. And I do want to say that you'll see on your screen some timers. So one of the things that feedback that I've gotten and other leaders have gotten is that there are certain comments, including from me, that take a little bit too long. And so we're going to try this timer out to make sure that we can, you know, hear everybody that wants to be heard on a subject, but also, you know, move on to different subjects so we don't get some filibustering or any kinds of dwelling on issues for too long. The intent is not to suppress any views, but rather if someone agrees with a comment that was made, they can either do a plus one in the chat or succinctly make that statement in an oral comment. So our proposal then would be to essentially do a 2-minute timer for initial contributions on a subject and then a follow-up for of 1 minute. Let's see how that works. You know, it's not our intent to want to stifle any conversation, but we have been spending, as Christopher said, a lot of time on some subjects, and seems like some of the same things are said over and over again. And then finally, one of the things that we're gonna do is really put much more effort into conversations online on email lists. For certain subjects, we're going to be setting up smaller groups, especially if it's a complicated topic. And one of those I'll be talking about when we talk about the next subject on the, or finishing up the pre-approval program. I think there's been certainly a lot of comments on our PDP, and we want to just try out some new things to see if we can make things more efficient. Kathy, I'll give you the last word, and then we'll get on to the subject, substance. Oh, I guess I won't.
Not coming off mute. Okay, and it's actually a question also for Cheryl, please, which is based on what you're saying of now doubling the amount of time that members, regular members participate, not even including the WorkTrack 5 people, and doing this and doing more online in small groups. Are you saying that if we are not full-time ICANNers, if we are not paid to be here full-time, we should just drop out now? Just checking.
So I can respond.
Oh, it's not Kathy.
Cheryl, it's a serious question. You're asking for an enormous amount of time with no notice, and you've only heard objections so far. Thanks.
And many of us discussed that this is what we thought we would hear, but we also need to present this as an option and see if we can find greater efficiencies in the way we're operating. We also don't want to stifle what seems to be very healthy and robust discussion about, as Christopher also reminded us, topics, including those that we know are going to be very important to have full, frank and fearless considerations. So we were hoping that the greater predictability associated with what's being done when, in other words, some time binding or time bounding, on the forecast work plan would assist people to pick and choose if that's one way that they think they might be able to manage. And Kathy, if you think that, you know, the leadership team, myself included, are looking forward to this, especially any of us who do something other than subsequent procedure PDP, I can assure you that's very much not the case. But we also have got a job to do in bringing the PDP to a close.
Thanks, Cheryl, and thanks, Kathy. And just for the record, I am I don't know if there's really anyone on this call or, well, I shouldn't make that assumption. I know that I am not paid by my employer to be on this call or chairing this group. So I just want to get that out for the record. I had to get my employer's permission. But I like many others, have a full-time job that completely separate and apart from the subsequent procedures. So I don't think it's fair when you kind of make some comments about how this is only benefiting those that get paid to do this. So I just want to just throw that in there. But again, let's continue more discussion on the email list like we're supposed to. But let's go on to the subject matter for the call. So let's go to the pre-approval process document. And while that gets put up, I think I highlighted a part where it says, hopefully you're on that, where it says, if you scroll up, whoever's got, Steve, you got control there. I think I highlighted a spot that says left off here. So it should be yellow highlight. I'm 100% sure. No, a little bit. Up, sorry. I could just look at the version online, but I'm trying to use the version that everybody can see on Zoom. Here we go. I think this is it, right? Yes, okay, good. All right, because I see that comment says left off here, next call. Okay, so we spent a lot of time talking about the pre-approval program. This is our, in fact, third call addressing it. But I think we've gotten to a point where there are some principles that it sounds like are getting some general approval or agreement, I should say lack of heavy objection at this point. So I just want to keep going through this document, and you'll see in the last section, not right now, but you'll see in the last section that there's a bunch of things that are referred over to other sections because of the tie-in with those and or because they're not unique to the pre-approval program. So where we left off on the RSP pre-approval program was a principle that we were discussing that says that the results of the program, so whether RSPs or which RSPs has passed evaluation, that list of those RSPs should be made available to be used by potential applicants with adequate amount of time to determine if they wish to apply for a GTLD and which RSP to use. Now, there was lots of discussion and it was back in the email chain with Ann and some others talking about whether that should be 4 months, 6 months was proposed, a year was proposed. I think at this point, the best thing that we can do, because we're kind of all grasping at straws at this point, is keeping this principle and then letting an evaluation or the implementation team that gets set up to determine along with ICANN staff what that exact time frame would be following this general policy of trying to ensure as much time as possible so that potential applicants could know the results prior to choosing an RS or prior to applying and or prior to choosing an RSP. So I think that pretty much covers most of the comments that you'll see below that. Again, you'll see 3 months, a year, 6 months. So I think that's probably where we're best in moving forward and can have best chance of getting some sort of consensus on this issue. Thoughts, comments? Okay. Then moving on to the evaluation standards. For this one, sorry, if you could just go jump down.
Oh, yes, Steve. You had Kathy's hand up for a moment. I'm not sure if she still has her hand up.
Oh, sorry, Kathy. Go ahead.
Thanks, Jeff. Hey, where are we on the, and maybe it's below, on taking people off, on taking backends off as RSPs if they are no longer approved?
Yeah, so what we discussed last week, and there was not too much follow-up on email afterwards, was that the sole purpose of applying for or getting pre-approved was to be on this list prior to the beginning of a round. Taking someone off the list didn't seem to fit in with that notion, especially because any actions, I don't want to get into all of last week's calls because we'd just be repeating the whole thing, but it didn't seem like to most people that were the comments that came in that taking someone off, it made sense to take someone off the list. If someone, because there was no process, I'm not doing a great job here, let me go back. Because in the current round, if someone applies in 2012, when there was a back-end RSP, it was approved and then that was it. If at a later point in time, prior to the completion of the evaluations of every single application, if a RSP was, or even a registry operator were in breach or terminated, there is no way in the current 2012 round to undo the previous approval of that RSP. So using that same logic, it didn't seem to make sense to have those removed from the pre-approval. The caveat being that we were talking about having a either a re-approval or some sort of process prior to the next application window to make sure that those RSPs should stay on the pre-approved list for that subsequent round. It seems like having that type of solution would avoid the bureaucracy, would avoid setting up really much more comprehensive programs than this was intended to solve on the balance. So I was hoping for some more communication on the list, and I think we should have it on the list without readdressing it. But let me give a couple minutes on this to Christopher and then to Kathy, and then encourage that discussion to go on the list. But let me go to Christopher and Kathy.
Thank you, Christopher Wilkinson, again for the record. Good morning. Jeff, I've stayed out of this discussion to a certain degree, but it seems to me that we need to be much more proactive. You're going to get, in the foreseeable future, reactions about the concentration of the RSP market, both economic and geographical. There will be registry applicants who will be under pressure, either from their owners or from their governments, to ensure that the back end of their business is conducted in the jurisdiction concerned. I think ICANN needs a technical assistance package and a buddy system to ensure that that applicants who need to find an RSP in their jurisdiction can do so, and that there will be technical and economic support to achieve that end. Otherwise, the RSP market will continue to be excessively concentrated from an economic point of view and politically excessively geographically concentrated. We need to look into that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. Then let me go to Kathy and then Jim.
Yeah, Jeff, I think you're in this case, there actually was online discussion. I think there was Anne following up, I believe it was on Jamie's suggestion, and letting applicants know when their chosen RSP was no longer pre-approved, because we don't think ICANN will leave if there are ever problems. We don't think ICANN's going to leave RSPs that have problems on the list. And we talked extensively about the notice an applicant might need and the time they might need to switch RSPs. I don't know. And that was followed up with on the list. So I think there actually is, I mean, I'm surprised it's not here. And I think you had very constructive work on the list. How do we incorporate that as quickly as possible? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. I'll go to Jim and Donna and then come back and circle to some of those points. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So my comments are not exactly focused on this as a subject matter, but just I'm trying to get a better sense on the process, because you're encouraging people to take these conversations to the list. Can you give us a sense as the co-lead on this, how you're going to be weighing that along with the comments that are made on a phone call and how it all gets wrapped in together? I'm just, you know, it was a pretty healthy discussion on this topic last go around. And then, as Kathy pointed out, there was some on the list, but you really want to see more of a demonstrated, documented reiteration of the arguments that were made on a call on the mailing list in order to get that to sort of set as opposition. I'm not sure how you want us to do this going forward. And it's not just on this issue, it's generally speaking. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I'm taking note of these, but I just want to go to Donna and then I'll kind of respond.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. I guess my comment was a little bit aligned with Jim's. So it's I did look at the thread that was discussion that was going on the email list, but I had trouble passing who had said what and in relation to what topic we were talking about. So the email discussion was a little bit hard to follow. So I think we probably do need a bit more structure to that. And I know it's more work for everybody, but maybe we can resolve Jim's issue about, whether we discuss something here. And I think some of the stuff that I struggle with when we discuss things here is that I never know what we've agreed to or what we're kind of heading down the same path on, or what you think is outside and we still have to deal with. So some clarity around that would be helpful. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. So actually, let me work backwards. So we are continually updating these documents. And so if you read these documents and kind of, we are incorporating the notes into these documents where we see things like agreements and other, or if there were strong opposition or whatnot, and referrals to other sections. So to keep up with it, best way is to kind of read, read these documents. We're trying to be very clear on things like draft principles, policies, and all sorts of things, just so that we can kind of summarize the conversations and also not give all the weight to the conversations that go on the phone or on these calls, because there are extensive comments and discussions and notes that took place prior to having the call. So even though it may seem like on a call, there's a few people that are leaning in one direction, take over what all the months or years of previous conversations on the subject. So I just want to. It's one of the reasons why, Jim, that I want to put more focus on the list, because, I don't want to give too much weight to, or I shouldn't say too much. I don't want to overly weigh the comments that are made on the phone or on these calls more so than the months that of comments and discussions that have led up to all of this. I think they're all important and they all need to be taken together. And so that's what we as the leadership do as a leadership team do, and policy staff, to update these documents. So we're trying to reflect that. So I think on the list, there are going to be some subjects that seem pretty large, and one of those we'll get to a little bit later, that we believe would require a separate kind of sub-mailing list, this way not to clutter up everything that everybody sees. But some subjects we think, you know, we're just going to have a few outstanding items where we didn't necessarily need to or don't need to establish a separate sub-mailing list. It's not an exact science, and it may turn out that something that we thought there were only a couple of issues on turn out to be bigger. We may need a list for that so that everybody's not inundated with all of the stuff that they may or may not want to see. We're just trying, those are the things we're trying to do. But Jim, yes, also to document the conversations. You know, the notes come out every week. I'm not sure, you know, there certainly are a couple people that review that religiously and make comments, but it's really not done by everybody. So, but that is really important to read those notes. We incorporate those notes into the documents to the extent we can. And you'll see some of those reflected later on in this call from the discussions that took place. So I don't know, Cheryl, if you want to add to that or anybody else wants to add to that.
Yeah, I just want to verbalize very briefly, Cheryl, for the record. Thanks, Jeff. What I put in chat, just so people and whoever listens to the audio also knows, one of the other things we're wanting to do is make sure at the end of each call we spend just a few minutes establishing where we are or are not up to in terms of any generalised agreements or lack thereof, or next steps towards developing generalised agreements or lack thereof on any of the topics and subtopics. And we also will be starting off each meeting with a brief recap of where we are up to. And that's with the intention of picking up what has happened in any list traffic and trying to integrate that. So we're trying to bookend these things as well as time bind them a bit better. Thank you.
Thanks, Cheryl. Steve, you are next.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Steve Chan from staff. And just, you know, in our role as staff, you know, we sit back and listen. And I get the impression, actually I'll just scroll for a moment. So going back to the high-level agreement, the very last one, I'll mention what it is in a second, but if you look at this one, it seems like there might be a disconnect in what the pre-approval system or program is supposed to do. So if you look at this bottom one, the working group confirms that the only difference between a pre-approved RSP and one that is approved during application evaluation is the timing of when the approval takes place. So I guess I just want to bring attention to this, this statement, which is supposed to be a high-level agreement. And if that is, if at least my understanding is correct, then that maybe put some of the concerns in a different context. I don't know if it helps to look at this one again and just get a confirmation that this understanding is correct, that there is agreement with this high level principle amongst the working group members. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Sorry, this is Jeff. So I'd like to hold off on that for one sec because I think it does relate to the next section. And so if you can go back and you'll see why, because it is part of this. If you go down to the evaluation standards, and also if you can go to, you can't go to because it was in an email, but in the email I sent out prior to the call, piggybacking on that high-level agreement, which like you, Steve, is what the leadership team understands the high-level agreement to be on. Because there is no difference between evaluating it earlier in time and evaluating it later in time during the application window. We think that the evaluation criteria should be put into or grouped into the discussions on, thanks for pulling it up, 2. Wait, is this the right one? I sent a couple emails out. No, actually, it should be, that would be the right one. Yes, thank you. So because that high-level principle, we think, has agreement, then it makes sense to group the technical discussions on the evaluation criteria with the evaluation criteria that would be for in the regular application process. And therefore, because there's been some good conversation between with, I know Jim was part of that conversation, Rubens, Anne, and others, I think the proposal there would be to create a small group to talk about the policies behind the evaluation process, the technical evaluation process. And that in that small group, it would be looking at the materials that were already discussed within the working group through Work Track 4, through the initial report. Those were sections 277 and 211.1, as well as the comments we got back on those sections, which were reviewed by subgroup B in the case of 277 and subgroup C for 211.1. Those were applicant reviews and registry testing, respectively. Those were the sections. And it also has the advantage of giving some more time for ICANN to get back to us on the Ebro pre-delegation questions that were raised by Jim, and for us as a group to evaluate those responses. So I'm going to go to the list. So if there are any issues with the high-level principle of treating the evaluations the same, or stated otherwise, that the only difference between the pre-approval process and the getting approved during or passing evaluation during the application window is a function of timing. Let me see if there's comments on that. Kathy, please.
Hi, Jeff. What I understood from the list is that it's a function of marketing. That's what the difference is the ability to market as an RSP to potential and interested applicants. So because of that, there is a consumer trust issue involved. And we heard about that extensively. So I think there is much more agreement here than we have listed. Thanks.
So I just, thanks, Kathy. For the record, the only person that raised the marketing comment was Greg Chatan in his comment that marketing advantage is not in the described in the initial report, nor was it described in any of our discussions or comments that we got back. So we have to be very, very careful in this group and not to discount the statements from Greg. I think it definitely could have an effect, but there has never been declared a purpose in any of the previous documentation until Greg and the follow-ups that mention that. And I think we really need to be careful not to keep piling on. And this is just one example of someone raises a comment about a potential marketing advantage, and then now it's kind of this other issue, which it never was intended to be. So any follow-up on that?
Yeah, Jeff, I've got a follow-up. It's Kathy.
Please, Kathy.
I don't think it was Greg. You heard about it actually from some of the representatives and from others who work with applicants, that this is an issue of marketing. I mean, look at the email, look at Jamie and Ann's exchange, and that, you know, RSPs who are holding themselves out to be RSPs should be currently certified or currently approved by ICANN. And if they've had incidents, and they have, I mean, that there's a notice issue here. And I think we're just bypassing, you know, the result of a long conversation that did continue on the list. So I think by all your standards, we've met a new level and we've added to our understanding on this issue.
Thanks, Kathy. Jamie, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Jamie Baxter for the record. I think the point that I would like to reiterate from what I was raising was more, I guess, a concern that this conversation started out of an interest in reducing costs and creating efficiencies that benefited the applicant. And I don't know if it's just me, but it feels like the conversation has now shifted to how we protect the RSPs. And I guess I'm just uneasy with that, because that wasn't the intent of going down this path from what I understood. And so I raised in my exchange through the list the concern for continuing to focus on the benefit this brings to applicants, since they're the ones who benefit from the cost saving and the efficiencies. So, you know, whatever comes from this that helps the RSPs, I'm certainly not against it, but I just get concerned when the conversation continues to shift to what they're losing out on or why we shouldn't be pushing back on them in some way, when that wasn't the intent of this from, again, from how I understood it as the conversation started way back. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. That's really, really important. And I think you're kind of making the point I was making earlier, which is that, you know, I think getting into a whole discussion of how one markets themselves and unfair competition is not the right focus for this conversation, because as you just said, the whole intent was to reduce costs, increase efficiency, to give greater predictability to applicants on, you know, who would be an RSP that they could choose that they know would have already passed the evaluation process, and that they wouldn't have to foot the bill or pay for the technical evaluation of the RSP. So all of that, and Jamie, is exactly what you said, which is why I think getting into the conversation of how it's used from a marketing perspective is really taking the conversation in a place that it takes us away from all of the 2 years of work that's gone into this discussion. And Steve just put in the chat, is it helpful to review the policy goals? I think it's helpful for people to do that offline. I absolutely think that that's essential, but I'm not 100% sure that we should do that at this point. Just read the chat. Kathy says, the question is what happens if his RSP loses its approval? And I think, Kathy, what we're saying is RSPs don't lose approval. Once they're evaluated, they have passed the evaluation. Now, if when they're in operation, they violate their SLAs, that's a contractual compliance issue at that point in time. But there's no, just like the current 2012 process, there is no mechanism that we are proposing in this that would envision having to revisit whether someone initially passed their evaluation. Same thing, like in 2012, there was no way. So let's say there was an evaluation of, what was the first TLD? Well, I don't want to go to actual TLDs. But let's say the first TLD was delegated in the route in 2013. That was at a point in time that was before all of the technical evaluations, including the subsequent if they went to extended evaluations, was completed. Now, if that first TLD that was delegated in the route somehow violated all of their SLAs and the RSP then was, or the registry operator were terminated, granted that didn't happen, there was in the 2012 round no mechanism to undo any evaluations with that RSP that were already done. So we're at the high level principle. What we're saying is the only difference in treatment between going through the pre-approval process and going through the regular approval process is a function of timing. That's it. And once we think about it from that standpoint, the whole notion of being removed from a list doesn't come into play. And let me address Christopher's comment too, because I think that does relate to a topic that's on here as well, and one that was responded to in an email to Anne, that no, there would no, would not, just like there are not contracts today between an RSP and ICANN, there would be no proposed contract between ICANN and the RSP as part of this pre-approval program. Now, there may be some, on the side, some terms and conditions for actually being evaluated, like just a terms and conditions of how to participate in that program, but no ongoing contract between ICANN and the RSP, just like there's no ongoing contract today with an RSP and ICANN. Kathy, please.
Sorry, coming off mute. In all my years in technical work, I've never heard of a one-way approval, and that someone, that an organization in the technical world that has failed its obligations cannot, it would continue to be listed as if it were, it had passed its obligations. So in this case, let's assume 5,000, 10,000, or 20,000 applications that will be processed over a significant bit of time. I agree with Don in the comments that not, you know, registry operators can be responsible for problems, but also RSPs certainly can. And so if an RSP is encountering problems, even as applicants are being processed, and if the RSP is no longer eligible for the expedited review because it has failed on certain technical grounds, I don't understand how we can have a runway list. You can, what goes up cannot come down. That doesn't make any sense to me. So file it is a huge minority position, and one that I'm finding absolutely crazy. And let's see who else agrees. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I just want to correct some things that were said. So, and maybe it's just because I wasn't clear. The 2012, you said that, Kathy, you said that you've never heard of a process, but that's what happened in 2012, right? In 2012, if you were approved during the evaluation, it's not like there was any process to unapprove you if you later violated your SLAs. That's all done at the contractual compliance level after the TLD is delegated. And in theory, it is possible to violate your SLAs with respect to one TLD, but not necessarily others. So the connection you're making is not necessarily, doesn't necessarily flow. And the other thing on the that you said is this is not an expedited review. This is not a quick review, quick look or anything like that. This is a full review, and going back to the high level principle, it would be the exact same review as if you applied in conjunction with an applicant that submitted it for a string. No differences. And when you think of it in that context, then this starts to make some more sense. So I don't want to spend too much more time on this, other than to say that let's continue this on a list. The evaluation criteria will create a small list, or not a small, just a sub list, to talk about the evaluation criteria with the understanding on the high level principle that the treatment of the RSP P's are the same regardless of when they choose to get approved. Cheryl, please.
Thanks. Just Cheryl Langdonor for the record. And while you're working in small group, et cetera, and while the rest of us are cogitating over these discussions and debates that are coming forward at this point in time, don't lose sight of the track of the fact that it is absolutely possible and indeed plausible for in our final report for us to say, and it's in keeping with the high level belief that the desirability of having benefit to applicants, of having a pre-approval list of registry service providers on deeper discussion and analysis became simply too complex to sort at this time, and it can be withdrawn. So don't lose sight of that as an outcome option as well.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. I mean, at the end of the day, we'll see where this goes. But, you know, I don't want to lose sight of all of the hours of discussions, transcripts, notes, comments, initial report, further comments that have already been done on this subject. And that's like, just to tell you, to prepare for this call, I went back through I can't guarantee it's every one of those, but as many of those as I could find and to balance it with the conversations that we've had over the last couple weeks. Okay, moving down onto to the voluntary program. So the comments seemed, with the exception of the business constituency, every other comment that we got on the voluntary, on whether the program should be voluntary or mandatory, was in favor of voluntary. And this again is looking at the community comment, I can't remember if it's one or two, I think it's two, looking at the work that was done from group work track one, subgroup A, all of that stuff. The only comment that we got of divergence was the business constituency, and we'll get to that in a second. And then we got a concern from the non-commercial stakeholder group, which I've read several times, and maybe Kathy or someone else, what I got out of that was that it was an issue with the wording, but not an issue with having the program voluntary. In fact, the non-commercial stakeholder group does specifically state that it should be a voluntary program. So I think that's an issue of wording. So I believe that we can resolve that one. On the business constituency divergence, what I did here is I kind of started a list of, from my own mind, of what would be the pros of making it mandatory and the cons, looking at previous conversations and transcripts and comments again. So I shouldn't have said it's out of my own mind. It's out of those previous discussions. One of the things that we can continue if we think this is a helpful exercise is to draw out this these lists further. But I want to just ask the group, is there any change in the group's view of whether this should be voluntary or mandatory? And hopefully everyone understands what I mean by voluntary or mandatory. I know Cheryl's hand's up, but I believe that's an old hand.
Cheryl, for the record, I just wanted to make sure that everyone realizes this is simply a taking of temperature exercise We're a relatively small group compared to other meetings. Any opinion in terms of Jeff's question posed would only be of interest and advisory at this stage. I just didn't want people to think that the barn door was closing there, Jeff. That's all.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. It's a great point. Sorry, I just, yes, it's a taking of temperature to make sure that at least on this call, we're reading the group correctly from the participants on this call. Okay. The next, I'm not seeing any additional comments other than Donna's confirmation of voluntary. If we move down to the funding and the costs issues, the recommendation here in the last bullet, which seemed to have agreement from all of the groups, although there was certainly concerns about knowing, you know, what those costs would be, because it's hard to understand that at this point. Given that, though, if our policy is that it's cost recovery, and then we direct the, you know, because only the cost will only be able to be figured out once the implementation is decided and discussed. I mean, I think at this point, all we can do is note that, you know, there are some reservations on this, but only because the costs are not known at this point, not in the principle that it should be cost recovery. Okay, great. This is probably the toughest one, or one of the toughest ones, is factoring in the number of TLDs that an RSP intends to support. The comment that we made in the initial report was, proposal that was put out for comment was that the RSP's overall breadth of registry operator support be also considered in this, not just in the pre-approval process, but in the approval process as well. And so this issue, like the others, would be part of the small group discussion if we all still agree with the principle that Steve pointed out earlier, that the treatment of RSPs should be the same regardless, except for the fact of when the evaluation takes place. So if we scroll down, I think, I'm trying to remember. Yes, okay, thank you. So at the end, the recommendation that I would propose would be that the implementation team, of course, in ICANN.org is part of that implementation team, should determine a mechanism to measure a potential RSP's ability to scale to handle self-declared number of TLDs, domain names, DNS queries, RDAP queries, etc., and provide responses as to how each RSP would increase scale to meet unexpected increases in volumes for the TLDs they support. In other words, just to kind of reword that in a shorter way, it's that this is really an issue of scalability that needs to be evaluated. And I think the small group that talks about this should work on this recommendation, but ultimately at the end of the day, an implementation team would be required to develop ways to measure scalability in these important items to understand whether or to evaluate whether an RSP could pass this part of the evaluation. Kathy, please.
Hate to do it, but going back again to that underlying agreement, which I don't think exists because we haven't balanced the obligations and requirements of the RSPs, and we haven't let applicants know when someone's no longer certified. So I think that repetition of that agreement, I don't I don't think is there. So I think we have to note that each time. And what I've done is put the NCSG comments, the more detailed comments into the chat room. But Jeff, I'm still concerned about that underlying agreement. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. So one of the things when I went back and reviewed the NCSG comments, along with the previous discussions and comments from NCSG previous to this, seems like there was and I think we really need to go back to the NCSG, because I think there was or is not necessarily the understanding of what was proposed as part of the pre-approval program from the comments that were received by the NCSG. The NCSG, I think we need to have conversations with the NCSG to make sure that we're on the same page in terms of what the program is and what it's not, and then see whether these comments still exist from the NCSG. In other words, it was my, from going back into those comments and reading it in conjunction with everything else, it seemed like the NCSG was looking at this program as more than the function of being no different other than timing or relying on timing. So I think this is something to explore with the NCSG, but it was the only comments that we got that seemed to not necessarily agree with the high level principle, but it also could be from not a full understanding of everything that we have discussed and to date. So I think we should go back to the NCSG and have that and just verify if this, given the new understandings and what we've, the principles that we're coming to general agreement on, whether this is still the view. Cheryl, is your hand up? New? Nope. Okay. Sorry. The hand looks up on my screen. Okay. So then looking at the the periodic reassessment. So let's look at this again here. And we sort of discussed this a little bit earlier. The discussion seemed to support periodic reassessment. Some have recommended that this be done either X number of years, while others have discussed only reassessing. I don't know if I have too many S's in there or just my eyes at this late hour, prior to the commencement of the next subsequent window. So the latter, meaning reassessing prior to the commencement of the next subsequent window, would work if we always do discrete rounds and never go to a first come first serve, which by the way, is seemingly the way that we're heading anyway. The former, meaning doing some assessment after X number of years, could have the issue of requiring reassessment during a round where applicants are supporting applications, thus making it difficult for applicants if for some reason the reassessment shows that they should not continue to be pre-approved. And on balance, it seems more logical to reassess prior to each round but if we ever do come to a first come first serve model, and I'm not saying we will or are, but if that ever happens, then we would obviously need to come back and revisit this. And as Christopher said, there's no agreement going towards first come, first serve. I agree with you, Christopher. I'm just trying to present a balanced view here without saying that it's never going to happen. I'm not saying it is going to happen. So I hope that makes sense. Let's see. Just going back in the comments. Okay, I've got those. Does that make sense? Again, this will be sort of referred to with the smaller group, because if you think about a reassessment of the pre-approved RSPs, then wouldn't it logically make sense to do the reassessment of subsequent approved RSPs that are approved during the evaluation process? Donna, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Ostrom from Newstar. So I'm just trying to understand this. So what you're suggesting is a periodic reassessment of an RSP outside of an application window. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm not. Sorry. I guess I wasn't clear.
Okay.
There are two options that we can consider. But at the end, it says on balance, there would only be a reassessment prior to the next round for that round, that next subsequent round. So okay. That's what is being suggested in this. But if the group wants to go a different direction and do some sort of reassessment every couple of years, then we'll have to figure out those other issues that stem from that. But just to be clear, looking at all of the previous materials, it seems like on balance that it would be more logical to just do the reassessment prior to each round.
Rather than a I guess I'm having trouble with the word reassessment. So the pre-approval process would be a requirement in any additional rounds or something like that, because how that reads to me is that the RSP would be assessed in some way by ICANN of its performance over time, and that is going down the path of some kind of accreditation or something like that. So that's my I would prefer it if we could be a little bit more sensitive to the wording. So let's be really clear about what it is we're trying to do here. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. I think the intention is exactly as you were discussing. So happy to take wording changes that make it better. The only thing I would ask you to consider, and it's something, well, the group will consider, is when someone is, and I use the term reassessed, but that's obviously a bad choice of words, but do we want an RSP to have to go through the full evaluation process prior to each round, or can there be, in essence, a shorter, not say shorter, but is there the need, I guess let me leave it that, is there a need for a full pre-approval process for each RSP before each round, or once they are pre-approved or regularly approved in an evaluation, do they need for the next round to be complete, to go through the full process again? Let me put it that way. Not an answer I think we need here, but I think that was going through my mind when I came up with the word reassessment. But I completely understand now that you've said it the way you did with your comments, completely understand the way that that's probably not the best wording. Let me go to Jamie and then Donna.
I think if we go back to the way you processed earlier to say that it's really different, just a difference between the timing of the evaluation, whether it's before the round opens or after the round opens or has closed, that seems to align with what you're suggesting, in that going into each round, there is some sort of an assessment that of the RSP that builds and presents confidence to applicants who are making selections. Especially if it's to select an RSP that is touting the pre-approval status. So I wouldn't be necessarily objectionable to that new evaluation being truncated in some way. I'm not a technical person, so I don't know what's really involved, but your suggestion or the way you've described it as there being a new evaluation going into each round, primarily, as I stated, for the purpose of giving the applicants the confidence in which RFPs are meeting the
criteria. Jamie, kind of trailed off there, got a little quiet, but I think we got the gist of the comment on the assessment and the support of in line with the principle of the only difference being the evaluation prior in time, and that the word assessment to you seems to convey that kind of meaning. Donna, please.
Sorry, Jeff, I've just had an urgent work thing come up, but my question was, are we going to discuss grandfathering? Because if we're going to discuss grandfathering, this point might be moot, but I'm not sure where we got to on that. Thanks.
Yeah, so the high level, it's a good question. On the grandfathering issue, if we go back, if you go back up to the high level principles, I'm trying to do this from memory, so I'm hoping my memory is correct. There was a notion of treating all equally, right? So where is that? The last one. The RSP pre-approval process and structure should treat incumbent RSPs and prospective RSPs in an equitable manner. This was a comment from Google, supported in comments from Mark Monner, Lamarit, but seems to have had support in our discussions. If you follow that principle, then the and I think it might also be in the high level agreements. I'm not 100% sure of that, but if you follow that and look at the comments we got on grandfathering, which were very much not in favor of grandfathering, it wasn't the intent to enter into that discussion for grandfathering for this next round. That may be a different discussion of grandfathering after that, now that everyone, we could give notice. In other words, you may be able to take the results from, and I'm not saying we should or shouldn't, I'm just saying it's a separate issue of whether you take those that are pre-approved and or approved in this next round and have a grandfathering process moving forward that could be discussed. Hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. Let me go to Jim and Kathy.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Jim Prendergast for the record. Could we, I asked a question in chat and I know it's tough following it, but maybe as part of the data request that we have going into ICANN about getting an update report on both the Ebro triggering incidents as well as the issues around pre-delegation testing, could we get a better sense from ICANN about what happens when there is an Ebro triggering incident? Is there a reassessment that takes place at that point, or is there some sort of retest that might help inform these discussions as well? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Sorry I missed that comment. Yeah, it's hard sometimes to follow it all. I think just to narrow your question down, I think it makes sense to ask about whether there is basically how a registry gets, I think what you're asking is how an RSP gets out of Ebro once it's put into that status. Man, I said that even worse. Sorry, Jim. I no, butchered right. That. I'll go back to the transcript, say it right, and then, but yes, I think that's important.
Yeah, because I think, you know, this is Jim again. I think for those who have been through the change of an RSP provider, there is a reassessment that accompanies that. But when there is a failure, I don't think anybody really knows the extent to, you know, the retesting that actually takes place at that point. So that'd be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Kathy, please.
Yeah, can you hear me, Jeff?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So I still see a tension here, especially as we're talking about grandfathering, between the protection for the RSPs and the protection for current and future applicants. And again, remind you, and I don't, especially as we're talking about extending this, of the comments of the NCSG, which I know you don't like, but that mechanisms, and here I'm just reading, mechanisms should be put in place in order to A, enable regular reviews of RSPs, B, public cataloging, sorry, it's late at night, of receipts against RSPs, it's complaints, and C, investigation response taken to the complaints. There has to be a process for unapproving, and we haven't gotten there yet, but what goes up must be able to come down if it's not deserving of the status. And I still don't see how we've built that in. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. Just to be clear, I think the group was saying the opposite, that from looking at the comments and everything in total, that there was not support for grandfathering RSPs with respect to this next round. What I was discussing was if we do a recurring pre-approval or reassessment, whatever we decide to call it, for subsequent rounds after this next one, there has not yet been a discussion of whether that periodic reassessment or recurring pre-approval would be the exact same full process that they went through, or whether it can be some other type of reassessment for those that have already been pre-approved. And that would be in line with the NCSG comments, I believe, on having that re-approval or reassessment, whatever anyone wants to call it. So I think there's agreement there. I think, if I didn't misinterpret. I want to get to the last couple parts here. Christopher, if you could be brief, that would be great. Or if we could save that to the small group.
Very briefly, this is like testing the car. The pre-approval has to have a term, and it has to be renewed. But I see no reason for synchronizing the renewal period of a pre-approval with rounds. It could be longer. You could make it longer and then just say that it will definitely be interrupted if there's any barrel.
Okay, thanks. And I think that's something, Christopher, group will look at with the technical issues. Again, want to stress that if we have a principle that there's no difference between those RSPs that are pre-approved and those that are approved, then any reassessments would apply equally to those that are approved during the application window as would those that were pre-approved before the application window. So that's something that this group would need to consider. If we look at then the next subject, and I do want to just do this in the last few minutes, again, with the notion of having this go to the small or to the subgroup mailing list. Can we scroll down? Sorry, Steve. The last couple of items here. So the grandfathering we already addressed. If we can scroll down a little bit more here to the referrals. Yes, so this is the section. So if you'll see in line with the notion of, again, treating pre-approved RSPs no differently than regularly approved RSPs, You'll see a number of referrals to these other sections which deal with the registry system testing or the registry application evaluation criteria, really where all of that fits in. And so you'll see the GAC comments, the NCSG comments, the registrar comments. All of that really is applicable to technical evaluations in general, especially if, again, we apply the high-level principle of there's no difference between those that are pre-approved and approved. So hopefully when you look at this document after the call, you can take that or just keep that in mind when you go through this document. And as we write some additional text and put it in here, that's the concepts that we will be keeping in mind as well. Just looking at the text, sorry, the comments. Donna said, can we just have a principle which says that, pre-approval would be required for future rounds. We absolutely could. This working group should discuss that, but yes, we certainly could have that as a principle. Some other comments on the Ebro. Krista's got a comment on RSP should be done, or pre-approval RSP should be done in a way that takes into account the capacity. So that all relates to the scalability comments that we talked about above with that recommendation. So please look at that scalability comment. And I looked in other industries as well, and it's very common in many other industries to look at scalability rather than coming up with a specific, yes, you're approved for X number of TLDs or X number that have X number, Y number of DNS queries and Z number of RDDS. I mean, it gets really, really complicated, but the organization's ability to scale can be evaluated in terms of their answers that they provide and is routinely done in many industries. So look at that recommendation. It seems to take into consideration a lot. There was a lot of divergence on the notion of taking in number of TLDs and number of queries, primarily because it was hard to come up with criteria, objective criteria. So if you look at the registries, the registrars, and even non-contracted parties, there were a number of them that said that it would be difficult to come up with an exact number. Putting all of that together, it seems like having a way to measure the scalability of an RSP takes that into consideration. Okay, just to recap, because I know we're out of time, that we are going to create a mailing list for those that want to participate further in these discussions, along with the registry system testing and evaluation criteria in general. Since we won't get to the topic on a full working group call for quite some time, I think this small group can work on hopefully resolving a number of things before we get to that, or should say resolve some of those to present to the full working group when we get to that topic. So we'll put out a call for volunteers that want to participate in that. And we'll do that shortly after this call, probably tomorrow. Next call is Monday, June 17th. I'll have to update the work plan because we didn't get into the public interest stuff, but we will definitely start on that next week. Thank you, everyone. And thanks for a productive call. You can stop the recording.